I'm an addict. My name is Gary. Speaker. To any member chosen to speak at an NA meeting needs to be someone who is working and living in the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminded us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our act of addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We come to Narcotics Anonymous to share our experience, strength, and hope. Once again, I'm an addict. My name is Gary. I'm clean through God's grace and mercy. And I was thinking about that God's grace and mercy because when I first got clean, I didn't know what God's grace was. And the brother who we looked up God's grace over the phone, and I was thinking about this today, the brother who looked that up over the phone with me is doing a 20-year bid. He's in jail doing 20 years, and it's truly through God's grace that I'm here, right? And last night, I want to thank Shakur for praying. I prayed with Shakur last night, and I always say that if I can just help one addict, I'm carrying out God's will. But we had an intimate prayer last night, and Shakur prayed. In the prayer, he was like, Father God is what he started off with, first of all. He said, Father God, if we can just help whoever you want us to help, and if it's just one addict, then we're doing God's will. I want to thank you for that. You know, there's a lot of people that I want to thank for supporting me. First and foremost, I want to thank my wife for coming out. My wife said, baby, do you want me to come? Do you share better with me there or without me? I do everything better with you, baby. I do everything better with my wife. You know, you know what I'm saying? Because I truly understand today, you know, my purpose. My purpose is to be the protector and provider of my family. That's my purpose as a man. And I truly understand my role, okay, what I'm here to, what God put me on this earth to do is to protect and provide for my family. You know what I mean? I thank God that Narcotics Anonymous has given me the ability to stand up and be a man today and be a protector and provider. You know what I mean? Our topic's supposed to be the 12 and 12, you know, but I came tonight because I don't need no literature. All I need tonight is me and the Almighty God. I'm going to share what's inside of me. Usman was like, well, you know, what are we going to share? You're going to do 12 and the 12? I said, no, I'm just going to do me. We just going to do us. You'll hear the 12 steps and the 12 traditions when I share with you my experience, strength, and hope in my life. Because this is all about living the program. When I first got here talking about the steps, right, we had the step guide wasn't even out. We had a little booklet that they broke down to us. If y'all remember, and some brothers put it together, and Shakur then brought it down to us. This brother is very instrumental in my life, and I ain't that arrogant to not give credit to credit is due to people who blew life in me. First of all, I'm home. I'm in the capital area. This is my home. I've been clean for 16 years. I got clean October 90, the 2nd of October, the day after the 1st of the month. We smoked up the welfare check, and then I surrendered. You know, when it's all gone, we usually surrender. But that night, it was a different type of surrender. It was a real surrender. It's what we call the original prayer. You know, the original one, when I rolled over off the couch and I said, God, please help me. I'm done. I knew I was done with not only using drugs, but I knew I was done with the lifestyle too. Because a part of my addiction was I was addicted to a lifestyle too. A part of my, you know, I talk so much about my wife because my wife is a part of my story. I met my wife 30 years ago at the pinball machine. I ain't need any Narcotics Anonymous. I met her in high school. I've been with my wife for 30-something years. We got resilience, and we've been through a lot of shit. We met before active addiction. I was on a pinball machine, and she asked me, we used to rig the machine, used to jack the legs up and shit where the ball wouldn't go down. We had 15, 20 games up there. She said, can I have a game? And me and her have been, bouncing ever since then, y'all, right? And she's a part of my story. And those people, there's somebody out there that's probably got a loved one who that they're using with and trying to come in recovery. I'm here to share that you can come in recovery and have a happy ending. And another thing that was on my heart recently was they say, get your line straight and pray like this is going to be your last prayer. And that's been on my heart lately, that live life like it's going to be the last one. And a couple of weeks ago, I came to a meeting, and I had been unplugged from prayer, and I asked the group, I said, listen, I'm really unplugged for prayer. Could somebody please help me get plugged back in? After that meeting, somebody met me in the hallway, and they prayed with me, and they wiped my face off. And I've been plugged in ever since. And I'm fired up. I've been making prayer on a regular, and I'm fired up. I was so excited about, coming to the Capital area and sharing. And this is beyond my wildest dreams. This is beyond my wildest dream. I'm still fired up about Narcotics Anonymous. I'm still excited about Narcotics Anonymous. I got heroes. I got people in Narcotics. I'm excited about being here with Brother Ushman. Because he was here and being here with a lot of other addicts, because we're talking about having had a spiritual awakening. I thank God for the people whose spirit was awoke when I got here, to help awaken my spirit. And now it's my turn to help awaken somebody else's spirit. They said, the only thing we want you to do, G, is do the same thing that we did for you for somebody else. I came through with the old school. They dust my knees off and said, get on in there, man, and go and recover. But me and my wife, when I came into recovery, when I said that last prayer, when I said that prayer that night, after all the food stamps was gone, and God answered my prayer. God proceeded to send me to a facility. And long story short, I was ready to surrender, but my wife wasn't. And I learned the hard way that I'm not only powerless over my addiction, I'm powerless over hers too. I came in this fellowship digesting the first step the hard way. I had to live the powerlessness over my disease, and I couldn't get her clean. She couldn't stay clean on my recovery. I had to live that first step. I remember going to the men's meeting crying. She just won't stop. I remember taking her to meetings, sitting her down, putting in a headlock. Do you hear what they saying? Tried to force this thing down her throat. She was collecting key tags and didn't have a day clean. But our story, runs together. But I'm here to share that I have 16 years and my wife got 14. I had to leave her out there for 2 years. I had to come in here and I had to lead by the example. I had to come in here and I had to surrender to this program. I had to come in here and admit my powerlessness over my disease. I had to come in here and understand that I not only had to surrender to the using, I had to surrender to the lifestyle. Because I came from a lifestyle. I was not only addicted to the drugs, I was addicted to the lifestyle. I came from the 70s. Farrakhan was talking about the 60s. I came in from the 70s, in the era of the pimps, players, and hustlers. They was our idols, smoking that weed. And I'm going to tell y'all something about that weed. My daughter be smoking that shit, man, and it be smelling good. And I have to come to the meetings and share that. I come from the 70s, Rick James. God damn it. God damn. Remember Rick James used to throw joints out at the concert. You know what I mean? And sometimes I get a smell of that weed. I'll be like, God damn, that shit smells good. But I'm an addict. I cannot use. You know what I mean? And I've really been in touch lately with the fact that, you know what I mean, I need to pray like it's my last prayer. And I need to live life like it's my last day. I need to enjoy my family and my friends. I can't take this for granted. You know what I mean? I got to, like, take this show on the road. I didn't work the 12 steps. You know what I mean? But now it comes to when I first got clean, like, right, we worked the steps through that working guy where it says, you know, remember the guy that said you go outside, you have a flat tire, what you going to do? Either you're going to practice the program or some shit like that, right? We had to work that. But that pamphlet was real good because it gave me an understanding of how to apply spiritual principles, how to and get the spiritual principle out of the step and incorporate it, because we talk about eating and internalizing this thing. We talking about eating the literature. We talking about having it inside of you, not just quoting it, but a living basic text. I'm a walking basic text, a how and why. I live this thing. It says it's nothing unless we live it. It's meaningless unless we live it. I began to, but my first journey through the steps was for sharing purposes. You can't share unless you work the step with a sponsor. So to be able to share, you got to work the step. So we used to go listen to our idols. We got some people in here who are role models. When I first heard a brother, God bless the dead, Brother Jamil, talk about close the gates, I was mesmerized. I was, boy, these brothers is putting together. We used to go across the country with Shakur. All piled up, and Joe was the first one to have a car. Joe was the first one to have a car, Freddie. And we used to all pile up. And we used to be a fan. Going coast to coast. And they taught us, man, you got to read this literature. You got to get with the literature. And they taught me how to read this literature and start to get an understanding of the literature. And with the understanding, then comes the application. In the first 5 years, you know, at first, my first couple of years, you know, I was just glad as hell to be clean. I was glad as hell. I came in with a bag of dirty clothes and a black wave cap and a pair of run-over tennis shoes. I ain't have nothing and nowhere to go. God bless, I was thinking about another sister who's passed away. The sister who was working at the detox facility, I used to get high with her. And she's dead today, but she couldn't come in recovery because her position wouldn't allow her. She was the head nurse at the detox. But at night, she would leave the detox and come to my house, and I would go run for her. She was in the closet. And when I surrendered that morning and went to the detox, she said, Gary, just go in the back. We got a room for you. You just gonna, I'm gonna just let you rest for the day. And I remember that surrender. I remember that first rest where my spirit had came to peace. Remember when the surrender, when I knew I was done. I knew the last one was the last one. I knew I was done. And she said, Gary, take a bath, take a shower, and just go to sleep. I took that shower, man, and I slept, and I felt free. I felt spiritually free. I knew I was done. I went downstairs to an NA meeting. I was sitting on a stoop. I got a picture of 541 in that stoop. I remember me sitting on the stoop. My spirit was broken. And the brothers came out. They looked down on me. They said, Guy, are you done? I said, yeah, man, I'm done. They said, let me dust your knees off. They dust my knees off. They used to do shit like that. Dust your knees off for you. I said, come on in here, man, and have a seat. And let's recover. It was some people here whose spirit was already awoken. Thank God they had had this spiritual awakening. And they had got outside of their self-centeredness, and they was willing to help a joker like me who had nothing, who knew no one, who had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go. They said, Guy, try asking God for a day clean first if you want to stay clean. This was the old timers used to tell us. Say, if you want to stay clean, try asking God first for a day clean. And I remember going upstairs and being ashamed to pray. God bless the day for another brother, Muhammad. Muhammad was my roommate. Muhammad was Red Berry back then. He would knock a nigga out. And Red Berry was my roommate, and he used to pray in the middle of the floor, and Red used to say, if anybody move in here while I'm praying, I'm gonna knock your ass out. I'm just coming in, shrunk down, I wasn't breathing. And Muhammad would make prayer in the middle of the floor. And we would hold our breath as Muhammad would pray. And when he finished, then he would get up and say, all right, now. We would continue to breathe. But when they went to sleep, I would sneak in the bathroom and I would pray. I would pray. I was ashamed. I didn't know no better. I would pray and I would ask God to keep me clean. And God, I know for sure, whenever I pray with the sincereness of my heart, God always delivered. He's always delivered. I proceeded to do the suggestions, and then I proceeded to go out, and I have an aunt, which last year, my aunt, the reason why I didn't come to the convention, I came to the convention last year because I had a commitment and I turned it down because I had a commitment with my aunt to do the Philadelphia Flower Show. I called my auntie up, I seen it, they had advertised the Philadelphia Flower Show, which is going on right now. And I called my auntie up, I said, auntie, let me take you to the Philadelphia Flower Show, talking about the 12 steps and the spiritual awakening, living in the steps, you know. She said, yeah, sure, nephew. My aunt lives in an old folks home. And the older people got a lot of experience, strength, and hope. A lot of experience, strength, and hope. And I felt the need that she needs somebody to share with. And I told the committee, I can't do the commitment. I have another commitment. And I jumped on the train that morning. I didn't want to drive the car. I wanted to drive the train with my aunt. I picked her up from the old folks' home, and we got on the train, and me and my aunt took a ride, and my aunt started sharing her story with me. My aunt is my mother's sister. My mother and father is dead. This aunt holds the jewels to my family. She knows the root. She knows what went down in the family. I don't have, my mother's not here. I had to do an 8-step at the grave site here, the 9th step at the grave site in Narcotics Anonymous. And some brothers walked me to the grave site because I was scared to go to the graveyard to pray. And some brothers said, we'll go with you. Some men took me to the grave site while I was to pray at mom's grave. Because when she died, I was using. I walked around the hospital. My mother said, could you please go get my son? I just want to tell him goodbye. My mother was dying from lung cancer, and I couldn't go because the disease wouldn't let me go up in there. I still feel that. I walked around Mercer Hospital. I couldn't go up in there. And my sisters came to me. They said, Mom, she says she wants to see you. I had enough courage to go up to my mother's bedside. And my mother said, son, I know you're scared. My mother said, but I've made peace with God. I'm ready to go home. She said, son, I want you to make me one promise, that you take care of your daughter no matter what goes down with you and her mother. Be a father to your child. And I'm able to go to the gravesite today and say, Mommy, I'm carrying out the promise I made to you because I'm a father to my daughter. And I'm a husband to my wife. So my aunt, we proceeded to go on this train ride to Philly. And she shared with me about how my father was a womanizer, that all the men in the Moore family was womanizers. And she said, nephew, could you please break the chain? Could you please stand up and be a man in this family for once? She told me the story how my father found his mother with her head cut off. I didn't know these secrets that the family kept. Only ones knew was my older sisters. They didn't tell me and my sister. She proceeded to tell me things that went down, down south, the roots. That's why it's so important for me now, right now. Family and friends are so important for me right now, Shakur. Family and friends, all I have to leave is my memories and the character that I am. Because there's a brother that always used to share, this program, you can rewrite your obituary. And I know today, if I die today or tomorrow, they'll say, here lies a brother who cared about people, who gave his, will give his last, who cared about the capital area, who loved the capital area, and loved my family. My aunt gave me so much that day, it was much more than I ever could get at a convention. Just to ride that train with my auntie, there's some people out here, some older people, that need to share, man. She said, nephew, I'm living in this old folks home, and they're carrying people out every day. And I'm wondering when it's going to be my turn. She said, she was living in sunny California. She moved back to Jersey because she said she wanted to be with her family. But she said she's very disappointed because family don't have time. She said, all I got is my parakeet. It put me in touch with, it's much deeper than carrying the message at this podium. There's somebody at home that needs to share. There's somebody at home that needs a hug. There's somebody at home that needs a commitment. And you should have seen the joy on my aunt's face when we went to the flower show. Not the white mouth thing. Why did he say white mouth? Damn. So I know how that is, because I've been on the other side watching people with the white. I'll be like, damn, somebody wanna wipe his mouth. But when I was on the train ride, somebody called me from the convention. And they was like, Gary, my man was doing the banquet last year. Rob was doing the banquet. And Rob said, Gary, I want you to come and introduce me. I said, Rob, right now, that's not important to me. What's important to me is right here, right now, with my aunt. And my aunt heard the conversation. She said, nephew, you know, we don't have to go. You know, we can turn around, and we can make it short, and we can, you can go back and be, you know, at the convention. I said, auntie, I'd rather be right here with you right now. And I proceeded to take my time and enjoy this flower show with my auntie. I bought her some flowers, and you should have seen how she lit up when I pulled back up in the old folks' home, and she came in with her flowers amongst her friends, and she said, this is my aunt. This is my nephew. You know how the older people, they find joy in us and saying, this is my nephew. They find joy in us. We kind of like all they got. My aunt shared with me on that train ride, she had one child that she adopted. And the adopted girl that she said, I spent all my life sacrificing for this girl. And when she got of age, she told me to kiss her ass. She said, Gary, that was the most painful experience I ever experienced in my life. She said, don't never forget about you. Do all you can do for your children, but don't forget about you. Because it'll come a time they will tell you to kiss they behind. So, I took that advice, and, you know, so I got so much out of that. When she walked in with those flowers and said, this is my nephew, and he took me to the Philadelphia Flower Show. And guess what? The night, my best friend Roger just called me before I came in, Kev. You know what he's doing? He got his father going to dinner. And he said, Gary, I'm there with you in spirit, but this what I'm doing tonight is more important. That's what the 12 step has done for me. The 12 steps has took me on a journey and has, we talk about the transformation. The 12 steps has transformed me into something that is beyond my wildest dreams. I never dreamed. Last week, after I got back into my prayer thing, and you know, when you're in the prayer and you in there, every day seems like it's just happy, joyous, and free. Good morning. You know, I'm at work, and there's this guy on my job, a white guy, and he's always saying, how you doing, Gary? Can I buy you a cup of coffee? You know, and I'm going in with me and my disease. Man, I don't want no coffee, man. Then the next day, he'll do the same thing. How you doing, Gary? Let me buy you a cup of coffee. You know, because most mornings, it take me to 10 o'clock to get right. You know what I mean? And I never thought so. Last week, me and the guy was talking, and he's a carpenter. He's real good. And I said, yo, man, this is, you know, I'm a contractor. I can use your skills. He was like, no, I just do it for hobby. He said, anyway, it don't matter because I'm going to die. I said, you're going to die? He said, yeah, you don't know? I'm going to die. I got a lung disease that turns my lungs into glass, and they've given me 6 months to a year before I die. Already? They gave the guy 6 months to a year, he said, before he dies. So I said, well, why are you working here? Shouldn't you be, like, out living the last 6 months of your life? He said, it's not about me. He says, I have a mother who's 75 years old and a brother who's suffering from lupus. I need to work this job and send this check that I'm making here to them in Florida until I die. And when I die, they'll be all right with my insurance money. But until then, I got to continue working to send them this paycheck. I said, boy, talking about selfless service, what we're talking about in the 12th step, spiritual principle of selfless service, doing something. I said, boy, here's a guy got 6 months, and he's not even concerned about his last 6 months. He's more concerned about his mother and his baby brother. And here I am, some days got the nerve to complain, to bitch and moan because I got to carry the ball. Last week, my wife has another illness, which sometimes she's uncomfortable with me talking about, but I have to come in here and share how I be scared for her. She's like, baby, I can't go to work today. My stomach is acting up. And I have to say, don't worry about it. I made a commitment to Almighty God to take care of you. And when they married us, they said what they said, Michelle. My money is her money, and her money is her money. Can you truly digest that? Today I figure it's an honor and privilege because all I have is not mine anyway. All that I have is not mine anyway. I'm doing things beyond my wildest dreams today. I'm going places, and I'm going to share this and shut it down. Last week, I had to take an exam. I'm the little boy who was taught by fear. I went to a class where when you went there to do the spelling, they used to whack your ass when you did it wrong back in the day. You used to get beatings. And I was so fearful every time I would go to school. I was fearful because we had a teacher, like, right, sat us in a circle, and you would come around and spell. And if you got it spelled wrong, she would count them up. And how many words you got spelled wrong, you would go back in the coat room, and she would go to beating on your behind while the whole class is out there hearing it. And you had to come out of there like you was all right. But it put some fear in me. and low self-esteem early before the drugs. I've been back to school the last 6 years, right, trying to take a trade, and I'm doing the thing. And when I first went to school, I felt less than. We're talking about outside the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I had to come in and ask y'all, like, right? I remember going in there, taking a placement test, and the jokers was finishing up, like, in 30 minutes. I'm struggling, eyes watering. God damn, you know what I mean? And I got to read things 3-4 times. Jokers moving out. I told my daughter, I said, daughter, you know, I wanted to leave. She said, Dad, did it ever occur to you they just putting anything down? So I had to go back in there and remind you the trade that I do, ain't too many of us do it. Only guy in the class. They didn't want to help me. They pop, they piling up. I'm the only black guy in there. They pooling. They helping each other, showing each other's papers. They won't let me in. And I'm feeling like an outsider. I'm ready to quit. Y'all said, keep going in there. And my instructor said, Gary, don't worry about it. The same lesson I put on the table for them, on the board for them, you getting. He said, do the work. And it panned out to be a favor for me. Because without them helping me, I had to get it for myself. And at the end of the courses, they was looking on my paper, Andre. One day they said, pass your papers to everybody and let somebody else mark them. They passed me this arrogant boy's paper. Come the sheets was pulled off of them. They wasn't all that they thought they were. I started marking them. Flat. Oh, my God. Red ink. Right? Passed it back to him. Bam. I said, okay, I'm in the game now. Then, you know what I mean? It was me holding me back. And last Wednesday, I went to Philly to take an exam. I got 2 more steps before I'm a master plumber, Dre. 2 more steps. And went to Philly last week to take an exam. I came in the door. It's like 60 guys in there. Oh, like three brothers. Walked in the door. Everybody looks at me. But they didn't know my self-esteem is up now. I feel good about me on the inside. The 12 steps is inside of me. I feel confident about me. I came on in there, and I was asking questions. I was the last guy to leave, but I was okay with that. Okay, I got to shut it down. Because y'all know in the Capital area, they created the 5-minute time clock. They got clocks and shit now. Gee, it's too much time. Right? So it's been an honor and privilege, man, to share. And it's really been an honor and privilege, like, right, to share this poem with a guy that I love and respect dearly. Sometimes these jokers that sacrifice and come and do this here stuff like that, sometimes we need to tell them how much we respect for what they do. You know what I mean? I respect the brothers who got enough courage, who take their time out of their lives to come here and share their experience, strength, and hope, and allow themselves to be a target. Because sometimes the speakers take a whole bunch of, the messengers always take an ass whooping, man. All of our messengers got beat, crucified, bust upside the head, you know. And with that, I want to thank y'all for allowing me to share it.
Our next speaker is Usma.
I'm a recovering addict. My name's Usman. Before we start, can everybody just hug somebody, anybody? You don't even have to know them. Just give them a hug. That's in keeping with what we're sharing about tonight, carrying the message. That's a form of carrying the message, giving somebody a simple loving hug. It's in keeping with anonymity, our 12th tradition as well. I want to begin by thanking God for everything. Because God is really anonymous and is really the foundation of my recovery. I want to thank the Capital area. I'm no stranger to the Capital area. And so I want to recognize that and thank the Capital area for inviting me to come down. I want to thank Gary for speaking, you know. Gary and I were talking before the meeting about how we were going to chop this up, you know, because all the way up to the meeting, I didn't know what I was sharing on. The tradition, the step. You going to do the step, I'm going to do the tradition, you doing the tradition, I'm doing the step, or we both doing the step and tradition. And he said, fuck it, just, I'm going to just. Gary said, I don't know about all, I'm just going to be Gary and that's it. So, you do whatever you want to do. I'm going to give him Gary and I'm going to sit my ass down. So I'm going to jump back and forth through from the step and the tradition and all of that because I didn't know what I was supposed to do, you know. I need to say right from the outset, part of anonymity is me not taking out sharing insurance, you know. I ain't got to tell you how long I've been here and what area I got foundated in and all of that good stuff. It's a simple message of recovery rings true. Right, so I'm just gonna share. I was talking to some people before the meeting, and they said, you gonna share tonight? And I said, yeah. They said, don't you get all fucked up when you're about to share? Like, if you wasn't, we gonna make sure you are, right? You know what I mean? Ain't you all messed up inside and everything? It's your stomach turning and this, that, and the other. Ain't your butt tight? What? You all messed up because you're about to share. And I'm there's nothing unique about me. I go through the same changes that everybody else goes through right before they get ready to share. I've just learned how to classify those feelings differently. Somebody explained to me it's mathematical. If God is coming in to help you, you necessarily going to feel out of control, you know? As a matter of fact, they told me, if you ever get ready to speak and you don't feel a certain something, run like hell. Because that means you're on your own. You know what I mean? I was talking to some other people before I was scheduled to speak, and somebody said, don't you speak at 11:30? And the other person there said, you didn't tell me you was going to speak. And I've seen people do that. Run all around the convention. You know I'm speaking 11:30, right? 11:30, 12 and 12. Amphitheater. You ought to be there. That's not necessary, you know. Just come and give a simple message of recovery on the 12th step and the 12th tradition. You know, in Just for the Day, it talks about how on January the 30th, the spiritual life given to us in recovery asks for expression. For we can only keep what we have by giving it away. And that for me is the 12th step in a nutshell. One of the reasons I try to give this message away is selfish. Because they said not one of the ways, not some of the ways, but the only way I can keep what I have is by being willing to share it with other people. And that's important. That's how the people before me kept what they had. They fed me. They fed my spirit, you know, and I'm eternally grateful for the people who came before me for doing what they did, freely given to me what was freely given to them, you know. In our new step working guide, the flat book, in the 12th step it says, and it begins like that, it says, if you've made it this far. Now that's deep right there. So that's telling me you ain't got to make it this far. You know, because everybody ain't here. Different people come in here with different degrees of sickness and rates of recovery. Some people is just doing a drive-by. You know what I mean? And that's why they make it conditional right from the start. They say, if you've made it this far, you have had a spiritual awakening. Now that's good news if you're really paying attention because, you know, sometimes people say, you know, the program only promised me freedom from active addiction. And that sounds good, but everything that sounds good is not necessarily sound good. because that's not true. They say if you've made it this far, you have had a spiritual awakening. That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing, because sometimes you can get all the way to step 12 and forget that the solution is spiritual in nature. So to know that if I got to step 12, I've had a spiritual awakening is good news. That's a guarantee. It says, if you've made it this far or not, you may perhaps hope to get, or you may look forward to, maybe, but you've had it. You've had it. And that's important to know. Well, what is a spiritual awakening? How you know when your spirit's awake? I have some sponsees whose spirits are dead like that. How do I know they're dead? Because they call me every day with the same dead bullshit. And I try to direct them to the steps. I said, that's why you're stuck like Chuck. Because you don't want to work the steps. And that's your solution. My point being that this is a 12-step program. And you're never going to find a happy ending to the story in the middle of the book. You never opened up a book in the middle and it said, the end. And Usman recovered happily ever after. He worked step 5. Usman worked the 3rd step, made a decision, and was good to go. The end. It's a 12-step program. If I want to have the spiritual awakening they talk about in this program, I got to work all 12 steps is the point I'm trying to make. You know, the most important word in all our step work is the word continue. Now, sometimes they serve it up with shade. They say this step won't be meaningful unless it's properly followed with. But if you throw up the equal sign, that means continue. It's, now that you've worked this, move on. Throw up the equal sign, that means continue. This is a continuous, never-ending program and cycle of spiritual awakenings. And if I understand that, what happens to me, by the time I get to the 12th step, I can run through my spiritual progressions quicker. Because that's what the 12 steps helps you to do. By the time you get to 12, you should be at a state of no longer guessing about God. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about a joker who comes into recovery worshiping coke and dope. Your God is coke and dope. A lot of people say that's strong language, but worship just means to constantly bow down to something. You know what I mean? If you wake up thinking about something, if you go to bed thinking about the same something, if the word a wake up even means anything to you, then you're worshiping at a false altar, right? So the whole thing about it is we're trying to get to a point where we can run through our spiritual progressions after coming in here hopeless. Do you remember coming in hopeless? Just like a mouse on a sticky pad. Just trying to get off and you can't. Wait, let me talk about me. Tell you kind of mouse I was. I was the kind of mouse that if you took me off the sticky pad, all I could think about would be running back to the sticky pad, even with no cheese on it. Now that's true hopelessness. That means you don't even have a clue as to what it takes to break the cycle of active addiction. So we're talking about running through the spiritual progressions where you move away from hopelessness till you get a vision of hope. You see somebody, maybe it's an H&I commitment, but you see another addict, because that's what you need to see. You don't need to be sprinkled, you know. You know what I mean? Because you hear that kind of stuff before you get in touch. Just go to the certain place and we're going to dunk your ass and then you're going to come up and be good to go. or we're going to lock you up, or we're going to threaten you. None of that works for us. We need to see a vision of hope. In the 12th step, it says, why did this program work for us? Why is it that another addict can tell us the same thing that your mama used to tell you? Same thing the judge told you. Same thing the probation officer told you, the therapist. Same thing your wife, your husband, your children. Credibility. Saying a word, credibility, because when we talk to one another, when we carry the message to one another, we can't deny that identification that hits you in the gut. You could be sitting there trying to be all cool and shit, but then you listen to the sister share and you say, oh, God damn, shut up. Why? Because that identification is so immediate. You can't run from it. There's nothing you could do about it. You might as well surrender. So you move from hopelessness. You said, well, you know, maybe there is hope for me. And then you come to believe. And that, too, is a process. Because recovery is, this spiritual awakening is like a process. You can be awake 1 minute and dead the next. You can wake up spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive. And by noon, be out your monkey mind. Because recovery is a fluid concept. A lot of the things we talk about in recovery needs constant refreshing. You got to stay at it constantly. You got to keep coming back because recovery is like breathing. No matter how much I breathed yesterday, it ain't going to help me today. You understand what I'm saying? My spirit might have been awake like that yesterday. I need to do some things like you were talking about, stay in position, to ensure that I'm taking a few breaths today. And no matter how much I breathe today, it might be a good idea to take a few fresh gulps of air tomorrow. That's how this spiritual awakening thing works. You know, and if I keep coming to believe, guess what? I'll grow into some trust. And then after I get that trust thing together, I might develop some faith. Yeah, what worked for you might work for me. So much so that I'm going to make a decision to buy into this new spiritual way of life. Whole hog, I'm buying in now. I'm not looking for material solutions to my spiritual challenges anymore. I'm not looking for outside remedies to my inside work I need to do anymore. I understand that God is my greatest source of strength and courage. Not how much money I have, because from the old school where we come from, wait, forget that. Even today, the mind is a funny thing. You could be recovering like that and periodically get thoughts of, you know what? You know, this NA stuff is all right and everything, but you know, if I just had enough scratch, damn. The big ball, $361 million. That's what I need. My spirit will really be awake then, boy. I'll wake up a whole other bunch of other people, too. Right? You get thoughts like that. If I just had the right love interest in my life, you can buy into foolishness like this only to find that you better play your greatest source of strength and courage close. You know, and even when you get that together, you might want to sort through the confusion and contradiction in your life. I remember doing a 4-step, and I was going to write about all my relationships, and I remember my sponsor said, I don't want to hear about Lottie Dottie and everybody. Okay. I only have one question for you. How did you manage to confuse all those women with God? I said, damn, let's move on. Let's talk about the jobs I had and I lost and this, that, and the other. He said, I only have one question for you. How did you constantly manage to confuse money, property, and prestige with God? I said, all righty, let's go on to the contradiction part. He said, the contradiction is this. How can you lay claim to knowing God and still be in a fetal position over the fact that somebody walked out of your life? Why are your shades drawn? Why is the phone off the hook? What is your major malfunction? And you at the same time claim to know God. So by the time I got to 11, that was my quest. That was my search for more knowledge, more knowing, more knowledge of God. And His will, not mine, and the power to carry it out. You know? And through this process, my spirit got up. So how do you know when you had a spiritual awakening? Well, first of all, you start to break out in frequent attacks of smiling. Yeah, I see people in recovery that's dry in a motherfucker, evil as hell. In recovery. I'm talking about in recovery. Running around miserable like that. A toxic spirit. You could just feel the waves of toxicity coming up off their ass as they walk towards you. When they open their mouth, everything that comes out of their mouth is toxic. They don't have a good word to say about anybody. Just heard someone say, oh, he gave a nice message. Oh, he ain't shit. Oh, doesn't she look nice? Oh, fuck her. Never a nice word, never an uplifting word to say about somebody. That's toxicity. Never smiling. I mean, here's somebody in attic heaven. This is as good as it gets, folks. If you ain't gonna smile now, I don't know what to tell you. This is all we got for you. Huh? Ain't no whole nother level of recovery. Ain't no recovery grad school. Well, now that you're here, you can look forward to going over here. If you just do this and go over here. Those of you interested in signing up for grad school recovery, form a line to the, this is it. You can't find something to be happy about. They say the smart person learns to laugh at life, and the really wise person learns to laugh at themselves. Why do you take yourself so morbidly serious? Lighten up. They said spiritual awakening, you will learn to love other people. Yeah, for real. Wish them the very best. Get up there, Gary, share your ass off. Why? Because you want for your brother what you want for yourself. You want for your sister what you want for yourself. And how about learning to love you? You know, you can be in recovery and still not loving yourself. I'm going to step on some toes now. You can be in recovery smoking like a broke stove. Yeah, you can. Some of you out there know what I'm talking about. You can be in recovery sitting in this meeting right now with a pocketbook full of Newports, smoking like a research monkey. I was somebody like that. I'll keep it on me so you don't feel offended. I was in recovery, running around sharing like Shakespeare. As soon as I finish, I run outside. I remember Suleiman and Saifullah said, yo, that was tight. He was sharing like that. Couldn't wait to come out here and use, though, huh? I said, use? How you gonna call me use? You hear me just sharing and this, that, and other? But they helped me connect the dots. Because remember, I'm talking about loving yourself. Right? See, here I am calling myself, loving myself, at the same time killing myself on the installment plan. In the name of loving me. There was a woman I met at a meeting in New York City, and she struggled because she said, you know what? I'm sick and tired of people making fun of my drug of choice. I said, what's your drug of choice? She said, cigarettes. I said, whoa. She said, yeah, that ain't no joke. And you know what makes it even worse? When I try to get recovery, I got to hold my breath and run through a whole bunch of people by the door using my drug of choice. So how would you like it if you went to the meeting and the speaker was speaking and said, wait a minute, wait a minute. Yeah, like I was saying. Oh, you tried to go in the meeting, everybody out front, outside the door, all tied up and everything. Just backing their ass off. That'll kick up some stuff in you. So I started connecting the dots, because when we talk about loving yourself, there's a whole bunch of self-destructive stuff you can do in recovery and calling yourself recovering. Matter of fact, the longer my spirit awakens, the more in touch I get with just how devastating this disease is, right? They say your spirit is awakened when you find great joy and beauty in your surroundings. I mean your surroundings, just like they are now. Not how you wish they were, hope they will someday become. Right now, today, what you have, your hand you have to play right now. Can't, like the man you shared about. Dying, finding great joy and beauty in just going to work. Can you do that? Or is your recovery on a layaway plan? Have you ever talked to somebody like that? How you doing? Well, I would be doing all right. If he got his act together. Did I tell you what she did? And if you got a good sponsor, they won't play that. So don't be telling me about them. Talk about you. Happiness is a decision. If you're not happy, what you waiting for? Isn't that something? You in recovery, still waiting for permission to be happy. Still laughing when stuff ain't funny. You might as well still be running the store for jokers. Hey, man, give me a pack of Newports. Be here when you get back. I have a little something for you, too. Carrying the message is a deep thing, you know. And I need to say some other things about carrying the message, because I want to talk about tradition, too. So I'm going to start jackrabbiting now. You know what? If I carry the message, it's none of my business whether or not the person I carry it to receives it or does something with it. Because all flowers don't bloom at the same time. There's a joker spoke here in this convention tonight, went to 36 treatment facilities. I know a brother's going to speak tomorrow, went to 72. Wait a minute, 72. Now, you might think that somewhere in the 72, somebody gave up on his ass. You know, maybe after 41, I don't know, 57, they say, hey. But that's not what this program is about. You can go other places where they talk about people being constitutionally incapable. We're not about that here. We say any addict can get this. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you've stumbled and fell. Pick yourself up and keep coming back. It talks about in our third tradition, there's no two classes of addicts in here. And this is not about misfits judging misfits. You find that in recovery. People want to judge somebody else. Or they didn't do this, or they did that, and so forth and so on. What's your major malfunction? Keep it on you, Usman, you know? So, you know, carrying the message does not require me to determine whether or not somebody else gets it. That's not a requirement. The requirement is desire. And which you can't measure. That's not a measurable commodity. Somebody could be nodding their ass off in the meeting and still have desire. And should still be free from judgment. Because the key is they're in the meeting. Right? And they safe. This is the one place they should be able to come free from judgment. Misfits shouldn't judge other misfits. So carrying a message is like being a mailman. Mailman just put it in the mailbox.
Go on to the next house.
He don't care whether you get your mail. He don't wait around to see you open it. He don't know whether you can read or not read. And he damn sure ain't gonna wait to see if you respond. He just put it in the box, keeps it moving. And that's the way this 12th step requires us to be. I want to talk about this because I want to segue to the tradition. There's something in the tradition, in the 12th step, rather, that is a natural segue to the tradition. Because it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Now, that's important because we ain't talking about somebody else's steps. This ain't succotash recovery. This ain't no smorgasbord fellowship. This ain't about addict and the alcoholic. We're talking about these steps, and we try to practice these principles and practice them in all of our affairs. You know, so it's not right to try to carry a message without an appropriate appreciation of the traditions. If you're sponsoring somebody, you have a responsibility to get them grounded in the traditions. And we have a 12th tradition that says anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions. Every mind must place principles before personality. We're talking about namelessness. And there's a variety of ways in which we can try to adhere to the principle of namelessness, you know? For example, let's say a trusted service position is up in your home group, right? And here you have the big Mahuff with 30 years, and then you had little Sally with 7 going for the same position. You know what's going to happen. Everybody going to bow down to the big Mahuff. Matter of fact, Sally might say, never mind. After she hear the big Mahuff qualify, that's why anonymity says all you really need to do is say, I have the required clean time. Doesn't matter whether I have 7 years or 30 years. All I need to have is the required clean time. And then that should do it. Shouldn't be anything else beyond that. You know? Anonymity is not my home group is the such and such home group, the best home group in the world. No, I got a good home group. That's all we need to know. Everybody think their home group is the best home group in the world. Matter of fact, if you don't think so, you might want to get a new one. You know? I'm so-and-so, and my sponsor is such and such. Nobody need to know who your sponsor is. We just need to know that you got one and it's working for you. Who it is, you don't need to piggyback off of them. They may be doing a good job in recovery, and you might be drafting off of them, trying to ride their recovery. So anonymity says that's not even necessary. Anonymity says, if we're going to have an anniversary, we don't need to say, all we need to do is say we're going to have 2 speakers. We don't need all this. We're going to have 2 dynamic speakers. They dynamic than a motherfucker. They so dynamic. We're going to have what's her name and so-and-so. Anonymity is when the big Mahuff comes into the meeting, you don't say,
Gary Goodmessage just came into the meeting. We don't know when we're going to see Gary Goodmessage again. You here all the time. Why don't you speak next week? So we can hear Gary Good's message. That's not how we do it up in here. Anonymity. But for the purpose of our own recovery, our occupational identity has no bearing on our ability to care for one another in NA. I remember coming around, they said, listen, if you Betty Crocker, leave your spoon at the door. Don't take out some occupational insurance. Well, you know, I work in treatment. So what the fuck? So you work in treatment. What does that give you? Why? Why do we say things like that? Because it has a chilling effect on a new member. Now, the person who worked in treatment might just have shared the drunkest stuff you ever want to hear in your life. He said, I was drunk. Yeah, but he worked in treatment. Oh. I guess I better keep coming then. Listen, anonymity in effect. A college degree, a trust fund, literacy, poverty, or the lack thereof. These circumstances that so powerfully affect so many other areas in our lives will neither help nor hinder our chances at recovery. Don't get my message twisted. If somebody's going to school and they're getting degrees, I'm really happy for them. But my point is, a simple message of recovery rings through. True. You don't need to beat people in the head with the fact that you in school. You should have been in school. Now you in school all late and shit. I mean, it's good. But every time you share, I don't care about you in school. Well, you know, now I live high on the hill, and I drive a such and so. Don't nobody care about that. I mean, this is recovery 101, right? We said we don't care how much, how little you had, who your connections are, what you want to do about your problem, and how can we help? And I'm not saying social acceptability doesn't equal recovery. I'm not saying it doesn't have any place in recovery. One of the byproducts of recovery is we get better. As soon as you stop using, it gets better. You got an automatic raise. You just ought to get something. If your money ain't shooting down the drain anymore, well, I mean, you just ought to have a little something. What are you doing with your money? I mean, you're not sitting around the table all night. So go to school, do whatever you want to do. Better yourself, that's a wonderful thing. But always keep the newer member in mind who comes in looking for a reason to disqualify themselves. You understand? Always looking for a reason to disqualify themselves. It talks about it in the Step Working Guide. It says, if... As we learned from our predecessors, having a single purpose is probably one of the most effective ways of ensuring that the opportunity will remain for an addict to find the identification he or she needs. If NA tried to be all things to all people, an addict might walk in wanting only to know how to stop using drugs and not be able to find anyone who knew. How to stop using? Well, first you need to go to college. I can probably get you in. Do you remember when you got here? And not only that, but what does it say to people who came here with their degrees already? Huh? If you give them the message, well, if you want to be successful in recovery, you need to go to school. You need to get a good job. Some people came in here having already been to school and already having had good jobs, and the disease still kicked the bone out their back. So what are you telling them? Oh, you already been to college? Well, we don't know what the fuck to tell you this. You hit. You finished. You know what I mean? We came here to stop using and go to college and get a big house. What about the person who came here sitting in the middle of the floor of that big house with all the furniture gone and the family gone and about to be foreclosed? How you can't tell them about the big house because they came here with the big house and it didn't keep them from using? You know? The point is this. One of the reasons we talk about anonymity is because there's no model for the recovering addict. And there's room in here for every single manifestation of the recovering person. This is not a place for the black addict, the white addict, the male addict, the female addict, the positive addict, the negative. Any addict can come up in here and get this. All you have to do is apply yourself to the spiritual principles of this program, and it's guaranteed. I want to go back to what I started with. If you work these steps, you will have a spiritual awakening. And that's the single most important ingredient to a successful recovery. You can recover for a long time, but if your spirit is dead, there's very little chance that you're going to have a successful recovery. There's a reservation in your program if one doesn't do the spiritual work needed to get a real ratchet wrench tight relationship with the God of your understanding, because trust and believe, stuff is going to happen in recovery. That money can't fix. Stuff is going to happen in recovery that a relationship can't help. And a lot of the stuff that you think, if I could just get this, that, or the third, when you get this, that, or the third, you may find that you're right back where you started from. Maybe even with multiplied problems. Because the key to the whole thing is a spiritual awakening. That's why, and I share this and shut it down. That's why our literature says our spiritual condition is the basis for a successful recovery, offering unlimited growth. That's why it says we see that by making our spiritual development our primary focus, all other areas of our lives will develop naturally as they were meant to all along. Prior to coming in here, I was told that a sister that I came around with, they found her dead. She had been dead for about a week. And then, you know what? There's a tendency to, when you hear that somebody died in recovery, to say, oh man, they didn't make it. But the reality is the 12th step says that all we have to do is try. We try to practice these principles, right? And live them in all our affairs. We try. You can't say that somebody who died wasn't trying. If she wasn't trying, she might have been dead a long time ago. And everybody's got a right to move on to freedom and ease and take advantage of God's grace and mercy. You still got to leave room for God. If God said, come on home, hey, when God snatched each one of us up, we ain't going to be able to stop it. He said, that's it. Ride's over. You're done. I remember being in the hospital. I had a heart condition. I was in the hospital. And I was all right for a while. You know, I got a program. Got a God of my understanding. What? Bring it, Doc. Doc said, you ready? Yeah, I'm ready. Got a God of my understanding, 12 steps of 12 traditions, what? Come on with it, Doc. He said, all righty then. Well, we'll just get you all prepped up. And before we go in, could you sign right here? I said, what's that? That's the consent form. Why do we need all of that? Well, we're pretty good here. Matter of fact, we do this operation all the time. But you could die. So sign right here. Huh? And I got in touch. I had a spiritual awakening. Huh? You get some serious health issues working, and your spirit gets vibrant. Huh? Your priorities just kind of naturally fall in order. All that little simple bullshit that you thought was important don't mean nothing. Huh? What you drive does not matter. You better pray that you ever drive again. You'll be grateful for the little simple things that we associate with a spiritual awakening. Ability to breathe. Whew. Hear the birds chirping. After I came out of the operation, I heard the little birds chirping. It wasn't like when I was using. I said, church, you motherfuckers. Chirp. Chirp. Chirp, birdies. Chirp. I wasn't trying to throw hot water on them. Hospital food was tasting good like that. Oh, bland-ass jello, green jello bullshit was tasty. You have any more? I'm ready to eat. I'm ready to get with it, you know? No more mountains out of molehills. You just be glad to walk, to get up. A good shit. The Chinese say the key to health is a good shit. When you all locked up and stuff, you... You know what I mean? This is important. You'd be surprised. A good fart. I was walking all around the hospital just, you know, because my ass is flapping. I got to split down the... I'm getting real silly now, so I know I need to shut up. But the point is this. Let me get back on point. The ability to eat is a miracle. Someone told me, you know, the most important things that we do are not done by us. Like making your lungs pump, your heart beat, your blood course through the veins. You ain't even responsible for most of your eye blinks. Most of the heavy work is done by God. So that's why they say die before you die. You ever heard that? Die before you die. Why? Because if you die, theoretically, before you die, because you're not dead, you'll appreciate still being alive. I'm Nat. My name's Usman. Thanks for listening.